lactating cows have what the lower critical temperatures where cows have to make modifications to survive if the temperature is lower than that. And it's for a lactating cow, it may be as low as minus 20 Fahrenheit. So we just don't see cold stress very much in cows. But what you said with heifers and dry cows, it's a different thing because they're not producing milk, so they don't get all that waste heat from production. So those are the lower critical temperature for these animals are probably 10 or 20 degrees above zero. So they have to get extra, if it gets colder than that, they need extra energy to burn up or to metabolize just to produce heat.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Adiseo USA, producers of SmartAmine M and MilkPay.com. Hi-D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status to deliver higher milk yield and carcass efficiency. Asepsis, an ounce of prevention. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, Smax Tech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Volac, unlocking ruminant potential through nutritional solutions for a sustainable future. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together.
Hello, and welcome to the Dairy Podcast Show. I'm Mark Thomas, and we're really fortunate today to have Dr. Bill Weiss with us. Welcome, Bill.
Welcome. Thanks for having me. It's good to see you again.
Likewise. So for those of you who don't know Bill or have heard his webinars, seen his publications, various online forums, etc. Bill is a retired professor emeritus from The Ohio State University, a wealth of knowledge. I've had plenty of opportunity to interact with Bill, especially in one of our nutrition groups, a small group, and really be able to pick his brain and learn from the years of experience. So, Bill, if you could give us a bit of a background of you have a long career and towards the end of that and working less now, but give us a little background of how you got to where you are today.
Well, I got my PhD at Ohio State many years ago, and then I went to North Dakota State for a few years, and then my old advisor retired and they asked me to apply for his job back at Ohio, so I did that. And I worked at OSU for about 35 years doing mostly research, but I also had an extension appointment. And then as any professor, you also have to teach a little bit, but predominantly research in dairy nutrition and pretty diverse, a lot of work on energy, especially predicting energy values of diets, a lot of work on minerals and vitamins, especially how they relate to health, mostly on trace minerals, but some macros as well. And then toward the end of the career, Norman St. Pierre and I got together and we started doing some work, which I think is really interesting. We're not going to talk about today, but some work on how variation in diet composition affects cow, day-to-day variation in diet composition can affect cows. It's a pretty diverse background or work, a pretty diverse research program.
And Bill, certainly, for those folks who are looking for practical information on vitamins, minerals, you've had a lot of work with NRC and the current NISM. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience in those projects? Obviously, those are very in-depth projects, working with collaboration with many folks.
And very, very time-consuming. It's the committees in both reports put in a tremendous amount of volunteer work. So I think the committees need to be commended on what they do. But what we try to do is we go through all the published literature and try and come up with recommendations or requirements for nutrients. For some, it's a lot easier because there's such a huge database. For example, energy. We have energy requirements down pretty well, but for a lot of the trace minerals and vitamins, there's not very much research out there. So we have to extrapolate a lot. And if you read the book in the new one, the 2021, we started using a term called adequate intake rather than requirement. And that just has gives readers an idea of the confidence we have in the numbers. So if we say a requirement is this, we have pretty good data, and we think that'll fit the average cow. If we say an adequate intake, what we're meaning is we think if you feed this much, the cow will be okay. So it just is a measure of confidence. It doesn't, if you're formulating, it just means the same thing, but you might put a little extra cushion in when we talk about adequate intake, because there's a lot of gaps in our trace nutrient knowledge of cattle and cattle.
Beta-carotene impacts reproductive performance in cattle. Because the main sources of beta-carotene are forages, most cattle don't get enough. Victus Transition from DSM Firmenich contains a blend of beta-carotene and mixed tocopherols, which provide needed vitamin A and antioxidants. Victus Transition fed cattle have better fertility rates and improved colostrum quality. Make sure your cattle get the beta-carotene they need with Victus Transition. Visit dsm.com/Victus Transition.
And Bill, I really like that approach. I guess whenever I talk to clients in any terms of recommendations, I always say if I make a statement and it's a solid statement, then that's based on data. And if it's my opinion, I'm going to tell you it's opinion. Like we really don't know. This is what we maybe think. And I think that's really important because, you know, a lot of times you hear a talk and there's something that's stated. And people take that as almost gospel, right? And you sometimes wonder, well, where's that research? Where did that come from? So
yeah, I think that's really important. And I tried to beat that in the head of my students. Is there's nothing wrong with speculating because, you know, you're trained and you know this stuff, but you need to make it clear saying this is what I think versus this is what I know.
Great. So as we talk about what we maybe think or what we maybe know, you were asked to talk on the topic of cold stress. So pretty relevant now in most places of the world where we have dairy cattle, maybe either the southern hemisphere. My colleagues in Argentina are thinking about heat stress now. And of course, we should really start thinking about heat stress now in preparation for what's coming in about 4 to 6 months in some regions. I always say, you know, we start thinking about what we're going to do with heat stress in April, May, and we missed the boat of getting it implemented in time. But so cold stress, we know it exists, especially in the northern climates. Certainly, I recall the days of rebalancing heifer rations in northern New York. And if you make sure you change that formulation come spring, or you're going to have fat heifers. Or on the flip side, this time of year, you don't get to it in time, and you start to see some thinner heifers. So it's obviously real. Tell us about what we should be thinking about in terms of cold stress in cattle.
Well, cold stress hasn't got near the research heat stress, because with a lactating cow, heat stress is a much, much, much bigger problem. For lactating cows, if you keep them dry and out of the wind, cold stress is almost not going to happen. It's not going to be an issue. And that's because these cows produce tremendous amounts of heat. And a lot of times that's a total waste. The cow has to dissipate that heat, and it does as a no value. But when it's cold out, obviously that waste heat is used to maintain body temperature. And when I taught at OSU, I did teach a course in energetics. And so we, you know, talk about heat production and, you know, the maintenance requirement of a cow, 100% of that is heat. It is lost by the animal's heat. So, you know, a Holstein cow is 15 megacals of maintenance. All that is heat. And then to produce milk, you know, it's not 100% efficiency. It's maybe 65, 66% efficiency. The 33% of inefficiency is heat. So these cows, and I did some calculations here. If a cow is producing 100 pounds of milk, she produces almost 40 megacals of heat. That, again, can warm the cow, or in heat stress and hot environments, she's got to get rid of 40 megacals of heat a day. And when I taught, a lot of that, you give those numbers and these students have no idea what 40 megacals is. A lot of people have no idea. So I put it in gasoline. A cow burns or produces about 1.5 gallons worth of gasoline heat a day. So you got to think, you got this small creature that's fairly well insulated. She's burning 1.5 gallons of gas inside her every day. So that keeps her pretty warm. So these cows, lactating cows, have what the lower critical temperatures where cows have to make modifications to survive if the temperature is lower than that. And it's for a lactating cow, it may be as low as minus 20 Fahrenheit. So we just don't see cold stress very much in cows. But what you said with heifers and dry cows, it's a different thing because they're not producing milk, so they don't get all that waste heat from production. So those are the lower critical temperature for these animals are probably 10 or 20 degrees above zero. So they have to get extra, if it gets colder than that, they need extra energy to burn up or to metabolize just to produce heat. So it's a problem with dry cows and heifers. It likely, if you have good facilities, it is not an issue with lactating cows though.
So Bill, I think that's a really important point because we've come to at least most producers and consultants to really put emphasis on heat stress being obviously very important for the lactating cow, but certainly as important for the dry or close-up cow. And some great research from Jeff Dahl and Jimena Laponte, et cetera, looking at that and then practical experience, obviously, in regions like here where I live in Torreón, we certainly see those negative effects. But that's a really good point now, separating that this huge fermentation vat that's generating in the lactating cow. It isn't the same in that dry cow or heifer. It makes absolute sense. And therefore, the cold stress is very different. So I think that's a really important point that I believe probably most folks don't necessarily think of right off.
And it's easy, with heat stress, it's hard to fix that with diet. In fact, I don't think you can. But cold stress can be fixed with diet. You just feed them more energy. And the energy has to be digested. But it doesn't matter if it's used with a high efficiency once it's digested, because if it's either going to be used directly for heat through metabolic processes, or it's going to be waste heat. And in both cases, it can warm the animal. So the source of the nutrient, as long as it's digestible, doesn't matter that much. Because again, if it's going to be used just for heat, it's just going to produce heat. Protein would have more heat, produce more heat per kilogram than digestible protein, than digestible starch or digestible fiber. So if you wanted to waste money, you could generate more heat from a high protein diet. But again, if it's digestible energy from starch, that won't produce quite as much heat, but it's a whole lot cheaper. But they do need more energy, and it has to be digestible energy.
Okay. Obviously, in those cases, then forage quality also super important. And then we have that variable that's obviously facilities. Are these, these heifers that are, or dry cows that are in a dry lot type facility or out in the backwoods, if you might, in certain regions, or are they in a barn? And obviously, that's going to have significant aspect of.
I'd say the wetness, if an animal is wet, it's going to take a tremendous amount of energy to keep her warm compared to it's the same cow in the same condition if she's dry. So facilities, and same with heat stress, it's you moderate environmental stress with good facilities. And so keep them dry, keep them out of the wind, and allow them to eat more energy. And like you said early on, they need to eat. So if you might have to improve forage quality, reduce fiber a little bit to get them to allow them to eat another pound or kilogram to get the energy they need to stay warm. So you're probably going to have to, for heifers and dry cows, improve the quality of the diet a little bit. We don't want dry cows to get fat, but if their maintenance requirement is 20-25% higher to keep warm, we have to allow them to eat that extra energy. But then as soon as it turns warm, we've got to monitor body condition, lower the quality of the diet, lower the energy intake, maintain good body condition.
So, Bill, given your experience, ration balancing programs such as AMTS, NDS, obviously have an environmental temperature component. And even beyond that, there's wind speed. There's a coat condition. Is the coat free of debris, or is it, you know, matted down? Those are very practical type things, and obviously they can vary, but those are parameters you can use in your formulation software. Based on your experience, how well do those systems predict those energy needs with environmental temperatures and or coat condition and wind or and even sun exposure? I've used that quite a bit in calf diets to show the increased need of feeding more milk during cold stress. And it's always a great tool to be able to show, look at this. You're feeding the same calf in the winter in northern New York, Wisconsin, Minnesota, what have you. Look what you need. I guess I haven't used that quite as much in terms of either heifers or dry cows. So I don't know if you can comment there.
I think the data we have on cold stress and baby calves is very good. And these models predict increased energy needs, I think, very, very good for these young calves. The other, for these older animals, I'm going to say I'm not sure on how accurate they are, but they show you need more. And that to me is an important issue. So they may be, I'm just making this number up, it might be under your conditions, it says they need 3 more megacals of ME. It might be 4, it might be 2, but it's very clear they need more. So the accuracy, just because these are very hard studies to measure, the energy needs, energy requirements or energy expenditure is extremely difficult to measure. So I use them more as a teachable moment to say there's no question they need more. I'd feed more, and there'd be a starting point if it says you need to feed under these conditions 10 more or 2 more megacals of ME. That would be my starting point. But for energy, the ultimate thing is body condition. That's what you have to monitor. And if they look like they're getting thin, feed them more. And if they're getting fat, feed them less. And that's, I'd use the models to start with, but never hesitate to make adjustments on body condition and make those adjustments as soon as you see a change you don't want, either too much or too little condition.
That makes perfect sense. It is really, you can use the model all day, but varying conditions, facilities, et cetera, look at the condition, look at the animals. And in an objective way also, I'm always surprised, even, you know, my fault myself is, you look at a pen of animals, you're like, gee, this group looks thin, because you're focused on the thin animals. And then you actually body condition score 50 animals and, oh, it's 6% that are on the thinner side. Okay, we probably don't have a problem here.
Exactly. You know, that's a good point.
Yeah. And a few of those animals are lame. So there's your explanation.
Yeah, yeah. But,
you know, make that an objective assessment, not just a casual observation, I'll say. And that's faulting myself in that, thinking a group is fat or thin when actually the average is just fine. We just have some outliers.
I've seen that so many times. I get you know, I'm guilty too. You hear something on the phone, so you're going to go to this farm and you're expecting this, and you look at it and say, no, these cows aren't fat. They look just about right. So
I also think, you know, we're still dealing with some newer concepts of what is ideal body condition score. And, you know, we sometimes deal with other folks at a dairy, either on site or off site, that are, you know, making comments that cows are too thin when, you know, they're just high producing Holsteins and that's an adequate condition for them. You know, looking more for that change in body condition as opposed to absolute condition score.
And I would say, you know, with this cold stress topic, you know, body condition is an insulator. That's, you know, an insulator of the animal. So you want to make sure, again, dry cows and heifers are in good condition as you approach winter. That it's an excellent insulator. Yeah, thin cows are going to lose more heat than fat cows. And again, you don't want them fat. You want them in good condition, the proper condition as winter starts, to help them insulate themselves.
On the flip side of that, I guess, which I haven't, you know, we're generally trying to maintain condition in an acceptable range, but are fat animals more affected by heat stress necessarily? And I guess you'd say generally, you know, over-conditioned heifers. Is that a concern? We want to maintain adequate conditions. That's key. But if you do have a group of over-conditioned heifers, are they potentially more stressed by heat stress? Or
my guess would be yes, but I'd also say that's probably a minor contributor. But again, you know, fat's a good insulator, and these animals, if the requirements are the same, the energy requirements are the same, then it's going to be more difficult for a fat animal to dissipate that heat. And so what she's going to do is eat less to generate less heat. So she's going to compensate for it. But I just say fatter cows, fatter animals, it's just harder for them to dissipate heat. So they have to make a greater adjustment than a thinner animal. But again, it's wouldn't be a major contributor, but I think it would have an effect.
And ideally maintaining adequate body condition for various other reasons, metabolic diseases, transition, et cetera, are far more important.
Exactly.
Mycotoxins are silent poisons, challenging the health and productivity of your cows. Protect your cows and your business by testing feedstuffs to know which mycotoxins are present in your environment. With that information in hand, you can work with your nutritionist to develop a management program to reduce mycotoxin impacts on your cows and your operation. To get started with your own mycotoxin control program, talk to your Diamond V representative today.
So, Bill, you know, as you said, when we get started, not a very long discussion and podcast, and short and sweet are good also for a topic, but I think giving our listeners something to think about. Again, we're also focused on heat stress that this time of year, especially in certain climates, thinking about the increased needs. And I think beyond that is, you know, what are the economics over time of building better facilities or having better facilities for dry cows? I know, especially in expanding herds, we sometimes see some groups of dry cows that are you know, out in a dry lot in certain climates that aren't the most favorable. And yeah, we you know, body condition wise, et cetera, we see the effects of that. So, it's always costly to build new facilities, but, you know, to really think of the pros and cons and the economics of over time being able to provide better housing for pregnant heifers or all stages and dry cows. Obviously, close up.
Yeah, we know, for example, if a dry cow is in good condition at dry off and she loses condition because of during the dry period because of environmental stresses, she's at much higher risk for metabolic problems. We always say, you know, fat cows are a high risk, which they are, but cows that are losing condition in the dry period also are at risk. So again, make sure they maintain proper condition. And it's going to take more energy under less good facilities than proper facilities. Because, again, you've got to pay for the cost of wind taking away heat, wet conditions, all that. That has an energetic cost. And if you don't pay that cost, it's going to have a health cost. So you need to think about this when you're looking at facilities. And I'm not an economist, but there's a lot of cost to poor facilities.
And I think that's probably the really one of the take-home points, Bill, right, is don't lose condition during the dry period, right? And we know that, but that's pretty tough. You know, you have a lactating cow in a controlled environment, free stall, what have you, and now she goes to some outside dry lot and maybe conditions like, again, Colorado or areas where maybe it's fairly dry, but cold and therefore
and
pretty tough to not have some loss in condition.
Yeah, and again, you just have to remember, it's energy. You know, if it's digested and the cow doesn't need it for maintenance, or the calf or the milk, it's going to be burned up or stored as fat. And so if she needs the energy, or needs extra energy because of heat loss, it's easy to do. You just got to let her eat more energy. So back down the fiber a little bit, or increase the digestibility of the diet, feed a little more starch, or feed better forage, more digestible fiber. So it's easy to do, but you have to do it. And you can't wait too long, because, you know, if it's been, you notice they're getting thin halfway through the dry period.
It's too late.
It's too late, exactly.
Yeah, anticipate.
So a general rule to me is, if you're under those conditions for a dry cow, increase, you know, we want to try and feed them right to the requirement. You know, not too fat, not too thin, just right to the requirement. But the requirement's probably going to go up 10 or 20%. So under cold conditions, and outside, but dry. So you might figure that's another 1 or 2 megacals of net energy. So you might just reformulate your diets in the winter to provide another 1 or 2 megacals of net energy for these dry cows. It's not a big change, but it needs to be done to prevent these losses of condition.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed. Our Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Diamond V, because animal health deserves a healthier approach. Your partner for extra animal performance, Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Trow Nutrition, North America. Everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science. Introducing Ultrasorb R3.0, Volac's comprehensive and complete solution to reduce the negative impact of naturally occurring toxins on ruminants. Ultrasorb R3.0 is a species-specific product designed to mitigate the effects of specific mycotoxins in the gastrointestinal tract of ruminants. Ultrasorb R3.0 also offers lipopolysaccharides binding capabilities. Endotoxins such as LPS can contribute to inflammation in ruminants, with energy partitioned to mount an immune response instead of production. Learn more about Ultrasorb R3.0 at volac.com.
So then really the take-home point would be formulating for 1 or 2 mCals more energy, and then really watching objectively body condition score and adjusting it.
There's really no data, and I can't think of any biological reason you need, say, more protein or more any mineral or vitamin under cold conditions. I just can't see why you would. They're going to eat a little bit more, so that'll increase nutrient intake a bit anyway. But to me, it's almost, and it probably is totally, but I won't say totally, it's almost just an energy adjustment.
Energy thing. Yeah, and I guess that makes sense. So you're even if you're formulating a ration MPME, you need to, that ME is getting lost, so you need to keep them.
Exactly. It's not doing anything. You're not getting fatter animals. You're not getting a bigger calf. It's just going into to metabolic cycles to produce heat. That's all it's doing.
Excellent. Well, Bill, thank you, especially for a topic that, you know, doesn't get a lot of research, perhaps, or a lot of publications or podcasts for that matter, but is obviously really important. And again, for everyone, don't forget, somewhat around the corner. We're not yet to Thanksgiving and Christmas, but we're going to see heat stress soon enough. So if your facilities aren't up to speed, start thinking about what things you can do, especially if that's infrastructure changes, water, fans, etc. Those things take time to order and install, etc. And or keep maintained. So we got both sides, heat stress and cold stress. Bill, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and I'm sure we'll get some other podcasts scheduled. There's could probably spend a few hours here chatting with you about other topics. But we'll wrap up for today and plan on having you again, hopefully in the near future.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for the invitation. It's been a fun discussion.
Again, thank you, Dr. Bill Weiss, Professor Emeritus from The Ohio State University. This is Mark Thomas signing off with the Dairy Podcast Show. Take care.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.